Hey guys, how you doing? Hope you're doing well. This is kind of like an update for pretty much what I would like to say is techno-optimism. And this is going to be a little bit different from the standard like doom and gloom. You're being surveilled, you're being watched, blah, blah, blah. Now, contrary to a lot of the words and things that I use and the way that most people, I guess, perceive the news and perceive how we look at privacy and security, you might consider most, if not all, people from without doing any deeper thinking or research that everyone is slightly a doomer. Like, oh, there's no help, there's no purpose, what's the point, I should just throw my tech out, shit like that. And maybe a couple years ago, I would agree that there is no hope. It's only going to get worse, and possibly it's going to be damn near impossible to be private. Now, after doing some soul searching, some thinking, and realized that in the Linux community and in Linux in general, I have shifted that negative nihilistic belief and have become more positive over the last couple of years. That doesn't mean that I can't be blind. I'm not going to be blind to the fact that there is some dystopian era level of tech space we're in right now, and there's some problems, and there's not a solution for every problem. That doesn't mean that I'm going to be not only blinded, but that doesn't mean I'm going to succumb and kneel to that there is no hope and that technology in itself has done a lot of great things for society. Whether it be the internet, whether it be there are good people out there making that saw the internet expanding rapidly and then making secure end-to-end encrypted software to ensure our privacy and security is there. You have foundations now, like the Signal Foundation, you have Proton, you have Tutanota. You have these people that are going out of their way and going against the status quo. They're like, I don't want to be spied on, I want there to be competition. And if you look at it from this point of view, it may hopefully change the way you're thinking about this. Is they're willing to take a risk and say, hey, you know what? I know you've had email free your entire life. Why not pay for it? And we can ensure that it's going to be more private. We don't need to then sell your data off. Or, hey, you know what? We're operating almost at a loss, or if not break even, and tons of like things like ride on this now. We're going to make an end-to-end encrypted messaging app that you're not going to pay for, that's going to be better than SMS, that's going to protect your privacy, that's going to protect your security. I mean, look at SimpleX. SimpleX is another messaging service that it removes the metadata, the aspect of it. It makes it truly more anonymous and maybe is the best alternative option that we have to Signal. Something to keep in mind. There's a lot of free software, not just free as in freedom, but free as in price, that I use on a daily basis that I would not physically be able to do any of my work or my even like digital life. I wouldn't be able to do any of that. And if it cost the same thing as like subscription this, you know, I'd be financially in a hole. So I'm ever grateful for the free and open source community, not only just because that they give this information and type of software to everyone, they give access to everyone. They think everyone should have access to this kind of stuff. It's truly a blessing to have people that put a lot of their time and effort aside to these to ensure that we have not only a more private future, but better security and better privacy built into apps that respect our freedom. And I know I just kind of like went on a little tangent there and like pretty much said the same thing for like 2 minutes, for like 4 minutes or whatever. But that's just how that's the only way I can put it into like words without having to like overcomplicate it. I think we take for granted a lot of stuff that we do use for free in terms of software, and then we also go into the subscription model and don't realize how much money we're throwing at these companies that don't respect your privacy or don't respect your privacy, definitely don't respect the security side of it. It's quite insane to me that I can get a password manager app for free that doesn't cost me a thing and is probably operating at thin, if not zero money, like operate, like, you know, it's not making many money. It's maybe not even doing any for them, whoever maintains these. I use KeePass XD, for example, and XD. And somebody is freely maintaining this so that everyone has access to a local, offline, secure password manager. And I said the same thing with Bitwarden. I was like, it's crazy. It's only like 10 bucks a year. And they really just care about making sure that everyone has access to this. And I think that's the thing that we should stop taking for granted. I would say even better, if you just recently stopped a subscription, go find a free and open source project and donate to them. Especially if you use it, say, one day out of the month, every single month, and it's made your life better, that dollar or $2 or $10 you give to the developer might be more than enough for hosting that month or just to do something for them so that they can continue to focus and function on those projects. I hope that some of these projects end up being their full-time career and they can sustain themselves. We have lost a lot of projects to lack of funding, unfortunately, in the free and open source privacy and security and in general software place. Divest OS was trying to maintain a good fork of Android that was reasonably secure, not as good as Graphene OS, even, you know, his words, not mine, but gave more users slightly better, more of their freedom back, and he was maintaining a bunch of devices. We had Pristinium that was ran by I2P, that was running a Tails-like I2P thumb drive that was really awesome, and they just disappeared. And I don't know if it was the financial burden or they just didn't want to maintain anymore because it wasn't getting enough traction to see the need for it. And if anybody wants to pick that project up, please do, because I'll donate to it. I'll promote it. I'll use it. I love the idea of having something like Tails, but it's built on I2P out of the box and just plug in, play, and I gain a little bit more anonymity out the gate. It's based on Debian, was, you know, in my opinion, maybe a mistake. Maybe I should do Fedora, even though I'm a Fedora hater. But there's Linux distros that I have paid for. I mean, I digress on the other part, but there's Linux distros that I've paid for. There's software that is free, but I've paid for. I don't always look at something as free as in cost or free as in freedom. I look at it as am I getting the most use out of it? And is it giving me so much back in value that I should be paying for this? Because I think people should be paid for their time at the end of the day. I mean, that's just how we live in a capitalist society. People should be rewarded for the labor. It's not all about making, you know, millions and millions of dollars and, you know, charging tens of thousands of dollars for license fees, but just I think people that put that time and effort into it, they should be rewarded. That's just like my personal take. Now there are software, the type of software that I think is giving me the serotonin boost of, I guess, like techno-optimism, is the fact not just Tutanota is like my email provider, and Signal, and SimpleX, and Session. It's not just them that keep me, making me feel like that it's not going to be that bad. I'm looking at the alternative spaces that are starting to get much more popular and pushing more people to it. It's not going to be easy, it's not going to be tomorrow, it's not going to be next year, but it's pushing more to it. The main software that I've been kind of looking at in terms of true liberation is a places like Noster, Kick, and Rumble, and these and Odyssey, and these companies and platforms are really starting to push more and more people over to their platform, big names. They're doing big contracts. They're trying to get big deals with big YouTubers so that it pushes them away from this tech monopolies that really do not care about your privacy, regardless, or your free speech, for the matter of fact. I just want to point that out. Free speech, at the end of the day, comes down if the platform agrees with you or not. And there are countless records of Elon Musk not caring about your free speech. There is something to say relatively about Blue Sky recently just got banned in Missouri. But the fact that you have a state that bans the ability to access content limits your speech, and that could be considered, in some people's eyes, very problematic. I think when you call yourself a decentralized platform and you care about freedom, not in the political sense, but the free to do as you wish and as you see fit on a platform and interact with people as you see and as you fit, that is true freedom. This is the thing about Noster, is it doesn't take a political stance on free speech. It takes on a stance that you cannot be censored. It takes a stance on that you can't be banned from the platform. You own the content. That is where the direction I think we should be moving in toward, like moving towards. Places like Noster give me an immense amount of techno-optimism, because it's a technology that is doing, and in my opinion, an inherent good for people that live in repressive areas where they may not be able to access Facebook, Twitter, Blue Sky, whatever. They can access Noster because Noster, at the end of the day, is a protocol. And this protocol operates on relays. And anybody, quite literally, can set up a relay. If you got a couple dollars, go set up a relay and allow other people to connect to your relay, because then you are fundamentally adding to the decentralized nature of Noster in itself. Running a Tor relay, running an I2P, running I2P helps decentralize the network. And then there's also decentralized cloud computing, like run on Flux. Flux.io, that's decentralized in its nature. It's very cheap computing, which is awesome. And it's allowing you to not have to worry about centralized servers like AWS, that owns the majority of all pretty much web services. They're huge. It's very difficult to actually get away from them. But there's other projects like uBlock Origin, doing Fed Times. Sam Bentz, his website darkweb daily dot live. I'm gonna butcher this one. Yes, darkwebdaily.live. This allows you to get verified onion links that are working. It's awesome. It allows you to visit places on Tor. It's a really cool dictionary, and I'm quite a fan of it. I use it to pretty much go like on places on Tor instead of having to remember onion links and, you know, bouncing all over the place. It's not only just people like this that fight for your freedom and your ability to access stuff like this. It is also journalists like the EFF. The EFF has been working very diligently to defend free speech, digital privacy, and innovation. I think they make some good products. I think that they go above and beyond to make sure that you have the right information. They do a lot of canvassing and a lot of article writing. I'm a huge fan of the EFF. I think they've done a more positive and good for 35 years. And there's not a lot of journalism that we're going to run into that's going to be good. It's going to be very difficult to tell the difference at some point between shitty, sloppy AI content or dog shit, whistling, garbage that's just not doing the research and they're just passing around a fucking article and they're just everyone's just copying each other. And I still think like places like Mastodon and Blue Sky and all these other platforms, and you got Habla, which is a way to write on Nostr in your articles. Like, it's such a good good resources to have. I get a lot of my information from Mastodon because of RSS bots that I've subscribed to, and they just update. Or like GrapheneOS, I get a lot of the information from there. From their Twitter or their Mastodon, or, you know, that's the great thing about the Fediverse. The Fediverse allows us to interact and intertwine all of our social media platforms. It's truly the bridge that the internet was that needed to be built on to bridge all these gaps. And I hope that Blue Sky makes it easier and cheaper I hope they get easier and cheaper to be able to pretty much operate the ATP protocol. AT protocol. It's apparently not super cheap, and it's not super easy, and it's a little complicated, but if they could get this, where make this protocol very easy to maintain and use and set up, I would think that would make them more decentralized, and you could operate a relay, and the more people that can operate these relays, the better. Now, that could come with some privacy concerns and problems, but that's not necessarily the worst thing on the planet, because if you can, you know, use something like Mulvad, which accepts Monero, then you essentially don't have to worry as much. That is a problem with Nostr. If you listen to my last podcast, there I went over some of the privacy concerns and issues with Nostr and how to mitigate them. You know, TLDR is just run your own relay. First off, you can do that completely yourself and interact with the other relays and then run a VPN. And maybe there'll be somewhere down the future where there'll be some obfuscation built into Nostr that makes it a little bit more obscure. Obfuscation. Damn, I can't say that word. I'll say it later, though. So, that is something to also put into consideration, is to make sure that when you're using some of these protocols, like Nostr, email, whatever, that there might be some privacy implications, that some privacy flaws that might not be the best. You have, like, a plethora of options. There's also, in terms of, I mean, cell service, it's not really good. These are kind of just like my thoughts and rambles I've had like for the last like week and two. Is like self-service is not good. There is something called Cloak, I think. Cloak. I don't really trust them. And then there's this other one that's been getting shilled around. I don't really care about the law enforcement as much, because they have like partners with CAPE. It's called CAPE. That's what it is. They have some partners with law enforcement, and they think people care about it. I mean, some people might, but law enforcement uses a lot of software, and they use Tor, and they use Noster, and I2P, and all these other places. But there's CAPE. It's, it just does not, I'm not a, it looks sus. And they have like a partnership with Proton, but doesn't mean anything. You can just, CAPE is like kind of like going for a security standpoint. I would just say just get a prepaid SIM card or JMP. You can get JMP chat. 120 minutes. I don't think people are calling that much over fucking. I don't think people are calling that much over a regular cell phone, but they give you 120 minutes and then unlimited talk and text. And then you can get just Wi-Fi everywhere or data. So like, the cell phone part, if you can just forfeit a cell phone number completely, absolutely fucking do it. That would be my first suggestion. That would solve a lot. And then maybe, I don't know, maybe do something like a burner phone. Not literally a burn, just in case like of emergencies, like if someone fucking calls you and, or for your work. If you can get away with JMP, like JMP chat or something, that'd be kind of base. And I feel like people could, if they are a low texter, voice caller. Like if you're not calling your work with your phone number, you're not texting people like constantly, and you kind of just want like something that just needs Wi-Fi, or you say you have a, like just a data only plan, that might cut down on your usage of like constant data collection, you know, screen time and fucking gooning time or whatever. That is something else, is not having access to the internet 24/7 might be a beneficial part of switching to that. Like, people always want to do these dumb minimalist phones that offer far worse security, and the whole point is, well, if I have a dumb phone, I'm not going to be do all banking on my own phone. Well, that's not the point, is you're still going to use it to text, right? Which is insecure. And if you're still going to use insecure text, then you aren't, and you're not using Signal, and you're not using XYZ, then you're fundamentally breaking the security of your device. And if you want to pay for these insecure devices and possibly have your shit leaked, like your one-time authentication code or your conversation with somebody, that's going to be a problem. And then if you're just going on your desktop to use fucking Facebook Messenger, then you're just making everything like worse. The true GigaChad techno optimist schizoid take is to use GrapheneOS as a dumb phone. Just have self-control. Don't go on the internet. Don't fucking get a mobile data plan. Just use it on Wi-Fi, so it's minimal internet time. If you think that it's becoming like a problem, because there's not really a lot of solutions in the terms of like dumb phones that are actually secure. GrapheneOS is technically a dumb phone. You don't have to install any Play services. You don't have to install any apps. And if you have good self-restraint, then you have a way to download the secure messaging app Signal and Simple X, and there you go. You know, you quite literally have a secure dumb phone. And if you want to use Google Messages RCS, if you want to be a normal person, you can use Google's messaging app with RCS over Wi-Fi. You know, you don't really need to connect. It doesn't need to have a active cell connection. So there's something that, you know, you could think of. Me, I'm reserting back to some older, maybe we consider outdated tech, but it's giving me better ownership and better compartmentalization, and that's what it really comes down to, like phone operating systems and operating systems in general, like GrapheneOS, CubesOS, give me the compartmentalization that I need. And some other ways I achieve this is just getting a flash drive for my movies and then watching them on a flash drive on whatever content, or just having it on the device. And I got an MP3 player, and I use physical headphones, so it makes me a little bit more aware, and I'm just going to briefly go over this. I got some over-the-head earphone, like headphones, that some like pretty decently good quality ones, and it's actually nice, because now, because I use it, I don't use Bluetooth headphones right at the current time. I don't think I'll ever go back to this, like Bluetooth headphones. I just plug the headphones into my phone, like into like the USB port with a dongle, and now I have to be more aware of my phone. I have to make sure that I'm not leaving it anywhere. I'm restrained by a certain amount of distance, and I just listen to the music, and kind of like, because I can't charge it, so I'm more conscious of the battery life, I guess. And then I was like, fuck it, why don't you just get an MP3 player? So I got an MP3 player, and all I do is go and buy the music, and then I use a really cool Linux tool called MPlayer, I think. Ooh, I'm going to have to check on this one. What is it called? It's called, I think, MPlayer. Yep, MPlayer for playing the music and then downloading. There's something else I used to download the soft, like the CD. It's kind of cool. If I can find it somewhere here. What is it? I don't think that's it. It's pretty sweet because it takes the CD. The only thing I don't like about it is it doesn't name the CD's songs. You have to do that manually. And I found that at the Harvard. There might be a way to do it. They're quite literally, I just could be just retarded, where I don't know what I'm doing, and I didn't RTFM. But I got MPlayer for playing the music, and then I got something else for the thing that I'm talking about, and I don't know if I'm gonna find it. MPlayer, oh, there we go. MPlayer, and then, nope, that's not it. God, I wish I could remember it. Because it's a cool tool that rips the CD straight to whatever. CD Paranoia. That's what it's called. Damn. That took a minute. CD Paranoia rips the CD to your whatever drive, like whatever file you're sitting in. But you can kind of like pick wherever you want to put it. And it's kind of cool, because it does have a way to run log complete analysis of the drive, caching, timing, and reading behavior. Verbose, quiet. Okay. It's a cool tool. There we go. I wish I had an option to just pull the names of the songs, but it does not. Oh, here, one and two tracks number record provided a finer grain offset. Specifies ripping from track one, 20 seconds, sector. Okay, so like there's a lot of information. I would say go check out CD Paranoia if you want a command line tool that gives you back your ripping freedom. I even went out and got a fucking CD drive, like, because of just how efficient it is. Now, the cool thing is my MP3 player has the ability to put files in there. Like, I can put files in there and use it as a portable flash stick. Now, it only has got 8 gigs of memory on it, but it's expandable up to 32. And I can compress a lot of these files down as far as I can to make sure that it won't take up too much space. But 32 gigs, that doesn't sound like a lot. Let's see. Let's do the math. How many songs fit in a 32 gigs. For MP3 players encoded and coming, you could 8 to 10,000 songs. If the MP3 players are encoded at higher quality, 8 to 10,000 songs. That's a lot. Now, obviously, if you go to a flash drive like 128, I'm going to upgrade this at some point. But if you just do medium quality FLAC, if you do FLAC files, you can do around 4,000 songs on 128 gigs. FLAC's like the highest quality you can get, I think. That's a lot. That's a lot of songs. 1,000 songs if they're all FLAC. And then you can just cycle through them. I don't think you realize how many, say even 10,000 songs. 10,000 songs is a lot, man. I don't think people will even listen to that. 5,000 MP3 songs and still had 6 gigs left. 1 gig holds about 300 songs. That's around 9,000 songs you could fit on. So, like, say you can get 10,000. That's great. That's a lot of songs. I mean, and you can get something called, like, you can get these bigger storage mediums that, like, there's something called the Tanagara. It's like, it looks like an iPod, but it's like completely open source. The hardware is open source. The firmware is open source. It's got a way to waste. It supports a ton of media formats. And then you can get these headphones called the Ploopy headphones. They got a built-in DAC. You got a killer-ass fucking sound iPod, open-source iPod, open-source headphone set that's all repairable for $500. It's about $250 for the headphones because it's got a built-in DAC, and then about $250 for the... And that sounds like a lot, but think about it. If you take a fucking... Spotify subscription, which isn't going to give you the highest quality, $10 a month times what? Let's say 36 months. You spent $360 in 3 years. So about $100, $120 a year, give or take. $120 a year. You own none of the songs. You just $300. Let's say you hypothetically buy, let's say you buy the just a basic MP3 player for like $10-$15, and then a basic set, nice pair of wired headphones. Let's say that sets you back $100, and you have only like $260 to spend on music. That is a lot of money. That is so much money. I don't think people realize. And you can go, I use Bandcamp to buy a lot of my music because it supports the artists. It's even better to just buy directly from the artists themselves. But let's see the average. Let's just pick a ambient random band. $2. Okay, that's not really average. Let's just do metal, ambient. No, don't DMC strike me. They want like $10. 18 euros. 10 euros. Compass Dick, like $10. Let's say $10. I can buy 10 CDs. Average CD, 10 CDs would be at $10. Let's say $15, $150. So I still have like another 150. I still have another 100. So I could buy 20 CDs and say there's like 10 songs on each one. 10, you know, times 20. That's 200 songs. That's not even close. And I'll like all of them, and I'll listen to all of them, and I'll enjoy all of them. You know, the difference, I don't care that I have access to 2,000, 3,000, fucking 200,000 fucking songs. And people bring up like, oh, but the recommendation, the algorithm. First off, Spotify's fucking egregious privacy policy. So, the best way to find bands is on Reddit. You can do, like, find random music racks. You can find totally random music. There's even a website called, SoundCloud Building Pukes. Oh, interesting. That's kind of weird. Like, you could do it through YouTube, you could do it through, like, I think I've seen shorts and, like, people are like, hey, I'm recommending this band. Music suggestions. Music suggestions is a subreddit. Songs with amazing drums. Just go on the internet and just find random, like, just look. Look through the internet. And you will find random music. You don't need fucking one app that's asking a lot of invasive privacy policies and tools. Base of privacy policy violations to fucking find random music. Just use the rest of the internet and then fucking pay the artist. Go to live shows. I found tons of bands, dirt cheap, like shows, like $10-$15 fucking shows, like nasty bar shows where it's like eight bands splitting like $100 that night, and some of the best bands I've seen come out of the out of the gates for that. All these bands start somewhere, and again, this goes back to ownership. You get to own. I get to own this music. I get to own these CDs. I get to own these things, and that makes me optimistic towards the future. That I hope I see more people get involved in ownership of the stuff that they want to buy. But I fear that it's, you know, I'm somewhat going to fall on deaf ears with maybe the younger generation. Hopefully not. I hope they just wake up and they're like, fuck yeah. I want to own everything. I want to own things. You know what I mean? But, and same thing with like movies. Like, just find movies that you like. And kind of like buy them, like, who, all these subscriptions kind of make it difficult to all these subscriptions kind of make it difficult to actually enjoy stuff. And then you don't, not only you don't own it, it makes you desensitized to, it's like, oh, another subscription, oh, $15 a month. We've moved away purely from ownership to everything's raping your fucking bank account. Like, imagine just waking up, another $15 gone. Just because, and you watch, probably, you don't even watch as much, listen to music as much as you think you do, or watch as much as you do. Do the math. You're like, I spend, say, $300 a year on subscriptions, probably more, a year. You probably spend between $300 and $500 a year on subscriptions. You could just stop all that. Take that extra money, put it towards something much cooler. But you could just buy movies. Go to the bargain. I go to some record stores and just look for discounted CDs. Sometimes people will be doing yard sales, and those throwaway boxes of CDs, and you might like them. And the ones you don't like, you can just trade and resell or whatever. I think ownership creates more of a very bright and optimistic future when it comes to tech. Do I think it's cool that there is innovative things that come out, like VR and like AI and whatever magical bussy shit that you see on the internet? It's cool. Or like, I actually find myself going on FDroid and like GitHub and just looking for really cool like highlighted repositories, because I think it's cool that tech exists. I just want it to exist in a more private and controllable manner where the users have choice and not less. I mean, no one's ever said, give me less freedom. And that's just kind of like my perspective is, I think it's good to acknowledge the bad that exists in society, especially in the tech space, because then you can know how to fix it. But I think it's also good that we should appreciate the good things that we have. And these are kind of just been like my thoughts for the last couple weeks. I'm going to go back to like a normal find and like, oh, fuck, man, we're getting revving the crypto wars again kind of thing. But this is just something I wanted to get out of my brain and kind of like put out there, hoping that it falls on somebody's ears and they're like, oh, that, yeah, man, you know what? I'm optimistic too, because I think with all the great advances that we have achieved as a society, we should appreciate, love, and support the software that has been uplifting us in a more private and secure way. And definitely, if you have the money, donate to your local free open source software company, because they'll appreciate it more than any other company under the sun. And that's pretty much going to be it, guys. I'll see you in the next one. You have a wonderful day. Be sure to download, share, and pirate this episode.